Welcome to Game Chat. This week we were talking about two games. The first one, well, they're both kind of like, they're short, kind of, but we're talking about Year Walk, which is by Samago, and The Beginner's Guide, which was developed by, Everything Unlimited or Davey Reedon. We'll go through intros really quick. I know we have someone that's not usually in our chats with us, but we just go down the list here on Discord so that people listening into the podcast will know who they're listening to, along with usually a very fun, sometimes, intro question. And this week's intro question is, if you were paid hundreds of dollars to do a year walk, which is kind of like a nighttime stroll into darkness and your uncertain future. Would you do it? Starting up at the top.
All right, this is Franco. Probably it'd have to be a lot of money.
Hundreds of dollars. What would you have to be paid, Frank?
I don't know. I would have to know the purpose. Why would I be doing this year walk?
To see your
future
prophecy.
Yeah, I think I've learned my lesson.
Okay. All right. Next. I think.
Is that me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just state your name.
I'm Jade. Yeah. A year walk.
Yeah, year walk is like a nighttime stroll to see your future.
Right. I'm going to be quiet on this game because I didn't play it. but would I? No, I want the future to be secret.
Okay. All right.
Or else it would be the current and then it wouldn't be
That's
the
true.
Future.
That's no. true. Why?
So out of principle, not out of the money. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Gotcha. Next.
This is Madeline. I took a lot of walks in the dark when I work nights. On nights when I wasn't at work, I'd take my dogs for a walk like at 2 or 3 in the morning around my neighborhood. And I never saw my future. So I did it for free several times already.
Oh, man. Well, you weren't in Sweden. So that's
true. And
that's
I hadn't like starved myself all day.
True.
While everyone else ate wonderful
true.
Food.
Yeah. Yeah.
That might have changed things.
Yeah. Next.
This is Kevin, and heck no, because the contents of the game.
yeah.
No, just no. I don't like the dark at night, like already, so
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Chris. I guess it would depend on how much they were offering. But also, you know, attending Boy Scout camp fairly regularly throughout the years, there was quite a few walking in the dark, aimlessly places.
And, yeah.
You know. I wouldn't mind it. So, and I think
sounds like you've already been on it. It sounds like he's like remembering like horror, like, oh gosh, the walk. Would I do it again? I don't know.
Oh man. Wow, that is the most like ominous story I've ever heard, Chris. This is Steph. For a year walk, hundreds of dollars. I don't think so. I wouldn't do it. There's a lot of things going against that. Again, welcome. So we'll begin our discussion first with Year Walk. It was released in 2013, so it has a few years on it, but again, developed by Samago. A little synopsis. In the old days, man tried to catch a glimpse of the future in the strangest of ways. Experience the ancient Swedish phenomena of year walking through a different kind of first-person adventure that blurs the line between two and three dimensions, okay, as well as reality and the supernatural. That's from Steam. So, guys, what did you think of the game? What What do you think the game was?
A thing? It was something. It wasn't super enjoyable to me, personally. I just kind of like, just kind of throw you in and are like, oh, here's your walk.
Yeah.
Like, here's some really kind of like, not very specific intro story thing of this woman talking to you after you like
kind
went
of
into her.
Who's kind of your girlfriend or
yeah.
You're someone that you're interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, they just kind of don't give you anything because I spent like the first like few minutes wondering where I was supposed to go.
Yeah, the one thing, I guess, looking back, I think, and I just kind of stumbled on it, and it's like, I wish they would have gotten this off the bat. I mean, the hint system, and I didn't really realize it was there at first, and then what really helps you play in the game is the journal. Not the journal,
the map?
Sort of the codex, you know, where it's like, if you go to the first
glossary,
it sort of tells you what you should be doing.
The encyclopedia?
Yeah. At first, you know, like all game codexes, nobody ever, hardly ever reads them until maybe, you know, three quarters of the way through the game or maybe even never. But in this game, if you go to like each section of the game had that little codex entry that's told you what it was going on, you know, what was it really talking about and what you had to do. So,
gosh, I don't know if I even realized that was happening. Like, the only thing that I knew that I had for to help was the map, of course, and the entries, the story, the folklore stories. Like, there were six or seven of them.
That's the
encyclopedia.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that that even would help me, other than just knowing what I'm looking at.
Well, they literally do list them in the order in which you play them.
Oh, so I didn't realize that. Fascinating. Yeah, this game was. Anyone else have any thoughts on what they walked away with after playing the game?
I liked this game. I know everybody else was hating on the puzzles, but if you don't play it like with a sense of urgency, like I just need to get through this game. Mm. I gave myself like 3 or 4 hours to play it.
Yeah.
And I think I only spent like 2 hours on it, but it was like, I enjoyed just kind of being like, I'll poke this and see if it does anything. And if it doesn't do anything, I'll just come back to it later.
Mm-hmm. I think it would have, oh, sorry. Go ahead, Madeline.
I liked that about it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it kind of felt like you're just wandering around in the woods and trying to be like, well, I think this thing over here has something to do with that over there. Mm-hmm. But
that was pretty much my approach as well.
I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way that you navigated also just was really weird to me, because you don't usually play games where you got where you're like navigating along, like basic, almost was like a side scroller, but in like,
yeah, it reminded me.
It's like a first-person side scroller.
I've played other games that do something similar, but it's been a while. Like, they're older games. I'm trying to think of what those were. I mean, I think maybe I don't remember. But nope. Yeah,
it almost reminded me of Google Maps. But like,
oh, yeah.
Like, when you're doing the navigation things, and you're going down the road,
it's true.
Yeah.
But Google
Maps, the video game.
I agree with Madeline in that, like, I think I would have enjoyed it better if I had it, like, on, because it is on mobile, I think. I think I would have enjoyed it better on mobile, like, just kind of playing it casually, like, as I'm waiting in line somewhere, rather than like she said, I was sitting down to get through it. You know, and thinking, oh, this will take an hour and a half. And then 2 hours in, I was like, oh, God, like, why? But yeah. So did you guys, had you heard of any of the folklore that was mentioned in the game before playing the Swedish stuff?
No. Mm-hmm. And you mentioning that, like, it has a mobile game.
Hello?
Hello? No.
It makes more sense as a mobile game.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as a mobile, with the up and the down, the limited movement and stuff like that, and the limited interaction.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I almost had to, everybody has their note sheets from this game. So I think, with the mobile game, it's kind of tough to take all these little notes.
How did you guys feel about because it kind of was a game that you have to take notes on. I didn't, honestly. I think I maybe took a picture. Oh, yeah, I took screenshots. That's what I did for my quote-unquote notes. Mm-hmm. But really, it kind of helped if you wrote a bunch of stuff down, it seems. Which, for me, like, I'm more of an instantaneous player, so that kind of frustrated me. Mm-hmm. But how did you guys feel about that? Did you think it added to the experience?
So yeah, I like games like this because it makes it more of a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's to me, it's more satisfying when I find the solution because I've had, like, everything written down and trying to figure out, like, exactly where what goes where.
Mm-hmm.
So, I liked it. Yeah.
And I've played puzzle games where they included a little, like, they had a button, like, with the, like, hints and options and all that stuff up at the top that was, like, a blank notepad that you could scribble in and stuff in the game and reference whenever you wanted. I assumed that's what the journal was at the beginning, and so I just tried to log into it with my Steam login, and it's like, nope. All right. Whatever, I'll come back to you later. Not important. I'll just write on my actual piece of paper.
That would have been great.
Yeah, I mean, I started taking notes early because it was like, I doubt if they're giving you all these markings and symbols for nothing. And this game doesn't look like it has fast travel, so I'm going to have to, I started even down to the point on the map marking where, like, the path markers were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay, this path marker is a wagon wheel and it goes here. This one's and it goes here.
Wow, man.
When you're wandering around that forest, the map will show you where you're at, but it's like, okay, I got to go over two, down
for
one.
Sure.
Over three, up two, you know, so.
Yeah, I think, Frank, didn't you print out a physical copy of the map?
Yes, I did.
That's impressive.
I took a screen cap. Well, thank God some games doesn't work, you know? And
that's impressive.
And there's all my little markings, like this goes there, this goes there. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I put a question to the thing, and I think maybe it's a good time to. It's like the first couple puzzles were okay, you know, it's like it's sort of visual and it's. All right, you spin the doll's head. He tells you which, gives you a pattern, which you're going to need later, but not right now. You know, so it's like, ooh, better jot that down. You know, left, right, left, right, left, right, right, left, left. So that was, you know, like Chris was saying, it's, you know, part of the puzzle and the part of the hunt where you're like, ooh, I did write this down. It's a good thing I wrote it down. Mm-hmm. But when you get to the point with the audio tones in the tree, where you have to sort of like figure out based on whether or not they're in harmony, whether or not that's the right place. It's like, boy.
Oh, with the forest and like the little pools of light.
Yeah. It's like, boy, I hate to be tone deaf playing this game.
It took me I didn't even realize until I was almost done with the puzzle that it was like, it was escalating.
Changing keys.
Yeah, it was escalating keys, and also it was in harmony with like what you were hearing in the game itself.
You got to find perfect pitch. or the
pitch
thing.
I
hated that it reset every time.
Oh yeah.
Like, it's not that it just sent you back one, it reset every time. So you had to go back through all of the things again.
Although surprising, that was one of the more like the puzzles I enjoyed the most. Because the rest of them seemed very like it bothers me whenever, like, I mean, there's, to me, like, there's a difference between escalating difficulty of puzzles, like escalating the difficulty, like as you go through the game, like there's that. And then there's introducing things in puzzles that like mechanics that have not been used since then. Like the puzzle with
the U and the N.
The U and the N.
That was totally out of the blue.
I was just like, because I struggled with that so hard. I was like, okay, well, because I was in that room earlier and I opened it up the door fine. But then I was trying to open it and I was like, okay, there's a U and an N. Am I supposed to like spell something, which is two letters? I tried spelling like none. And I was like, is there something with a nun like in one of the details? And then it racked my brain, and then I looked it up and felt like an idiot. But then also I'm like, but there were no other puzzles. There was nothing else that used me pressing letter keys in order to progress. So I don't know. Stuff like that really agitates me as a player, but
you'll lose a little bit of the immersion, and B, like I said, Mike, it's like at that point in the game, you're sort of lose your intrepidness on the puzzles. It's like, all right, sometimes this game's going to have some obtuse puzzles and I'm not getting it right away. So I'm just going to like have a bookmark to the walkthrough ready.
Yeah.
I feel like the whole game was obtuse puzzles.
Like, yeah.
At times, but you know, some of it was, I can imagine.
I was going to say, I know that like playing it on mobile, they did something different with that one. Like it was, I think like a pool of blood on the ground or something that you had to like drag. So it was a completely different puzzle since you can't really press like an N and a U key together on a phone very easily and still be playing a game. I don't know. Like, that's why I think that I think the game would seem better on mobile than it does playing it like on a PC. But it seems like it was created to be a mobile game.
Again, I didn't like play this game, but I'm curious if you guys have played Myst.
Oh yeah.
Myst puzzles, though they're weird and sometimes confusing, they seem to be a little bit more obvious than the puzzles that were in this game, at least in my opinion.
I agree. Yeah.
Some of them I get really like some of what you were saying sounded like even the same as Myst, because in Myst there's near the end of the first one, at least there's like you have to go in a certain direction in a cart, and to get the direction you go in the cart, you had to have written down, like you were saying, you write down what sound effects things had made in one of the previous worlds.
Oof.
Yes.
So like if you didn't have that written down, there's no answer in there and you can't even leave that world till you get this right.
Ew.
So if you didn't make alternative saves, and I mean, this wasn't like during the time where you could just look up a walkthrough.
Right.
So yeah, it's weird. Cause I have a friend who, he says he still has his parents missed three like notes that they took because they had a group that just did it, and he said it looks like the scribbles of a madman because it's like 83 pages. It's just like, you know, wait, it's sub 33, like this connects to and he's like, I'm not gonna play that game, like this looks like they went insane and then they figured it out. And sounds similar.
Some of these puzzles are really obscure. It's usually a lot of the later ones in the game as well.
Well, and the thing about Myst was that, like, you'd have to write down a lot of unnecessary things on the off chance that you might need one of those unnecessary things for something necessary, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should like frame them and put them in a poster, like underneath it.
Yeah.
A picture box of the game. You know, it's like, these are the manic writings of while I was playing the game.
Special edition.
Yeah, you find yourself doing, I found myself doing the same thing in this game. It's like every stone, you know, writing down what the stone looked like. Yeah, rough sketch.
Man, I mean, Myst was, those games were on my playlist. I'm not quite so sure anymore.
Myst was more frustrating because of the lady.
Writing down stuff. I don't know, like for some reason. I'm impatient, I guess. It's a patience thing. I completely understand that. This is a me problem, not a game problem.
It does break you out some, I think, to have to write stuff down. But at the same time, I also kind of like puzzles that are too big for me to keep in my head. So
Yeah. That's a good point. It does, I think, adds a certain kind of intrigue to it, and makes it seem more like a puzzle than just something to get through to the next area.
I will say to Jade that this game moves like Myst, where it's up, down, left, right, and you only see what's in front of you. So it's you can't turn your head. It's sort of like you have to know based on what you're looking at where you are.
Right. Well, yeah, when I was looking at the thing, the games, the styles that came to mind aren't necessarily puzzle games, but the first one was Limbo. Like it's a side scrolling, you know, you're kind of locked into what you're looking at.
Yeah.
There's another one called Lumo City, something like that.
Oh yeah, Lumino, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lumino, the one that's like made all stop motion with paper and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like those kinds of games come to mind, but the first one that came to mind was Legend of Zelda 2, that crappy game. It's just like side scrolling.
I think that was it. I think that's what I'm thinking of. King's, not like some of the original like King's Quests and stuff. We're not King's Quest, but the I don't know. There was a dungeon game that we played on the Nintendo that you could only move forward and on sides, and anyways, the game is about, taking the year walk, which is, you know, walking in the middle of the night. I forgot about the food deprivation, Madeline. They didn't eat all day?
Yeah, it's like on, like, the longest night of the year, I think. You have to, like, everybody else is feasting for the end of the year, and you have to, like, not eat or drink anything, and then stay up until midnight.
Okay.
Go out in the woods and find your future.
It was specific nights, one of them being the December 31st, and then you're walking on New Year's Day.
Yeah. Okay. I think I remember that now. These people taking these year walks, like, they were obviously, you know, they had sleep deprivation because it's the middle of the night. If I was going on a walk, and this is just hypothetical, if I was going on a walk to possibly see my future, like, I probably wouldn't sleep for a couple of nights before that either very well. It seems kind of like a big moment. But, you know, and so also you're hungry, you haven't drank anything. Like, and so obviously, like, I mean, to me, like, it almost seemed like, you know, that's part of the visions. Like, that's part of, like, that could play effect to what you're seeing, you know, walking around in the middle of the night to a church, I guess, sanctuary. Do you guys think that I mean, it kind of puts in perspective, like, these Swedish myths that they have in the game, you know, that you also encounter in the game. Those are from, like, quote unquote, accounts of people and things happening to them. A lot of them, like, as I was reading them, like, I was like, you know, this could be like this and this, like, babies disappearing. This could be anything, like, you know, like,
right.
Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, some kind of mythological creature. Like, do you think that could have, like, played an effect to some of these mythologies, like that sleep deprivation and not eating?
Yeah, like the telling of tales and stuff and people's imaginations running wild, possibly combinations with food or unintentional drugs. Because I guess at some, I don't know if people could accidentally end up having things and just not knowing, like, oh, this is gonna go and give me hallucinations because it's a poisonous mushroom.
Or even, well, and there's a lot of cultures that would purposely seek out psychotropic substances so that they could have hallucinations, which they read as visions that were prophetic of their future. So it's not, it's common.
Yeah. See peyote.
Yes.
I found the mythology pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seemed, all of it seemed very vindictive. Like everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like there was not any hope or salvation or like any of that.
No.
Everything was all like, everyone is terrible and everything is out to get them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there was one. I don't have like anything up in front of me, but I think there was one that was like she could help you. Like it was one of the, you know, that the spirit could help you, but then she could also kill you or or put a curse on you.
It essentially was the equivalent of the siren.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Greek culture,
the forest
or something.
Lady.
Yeah. She was the first one you encounter?
Yes. The first one I did anyway, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was reading a few things about this game, and, like, it's known that the creators originally wrote this for a screenplay, like for a film, but then decided that, you know, kind of joked about it being made into a game, and then they kind of, like, were like, hey, let's go with this. They rewrote a lot of it, but except for the beginning and the ending, they said they stayed the same. Do you think that this would have worked better as kind of like a spoopy film, or do you think that it works better in this medium?
I think it would have worked better as a film. Mm-hmm. Because
how do you think that?
You kind of don't really know what the heck is going on. Mm-hmm. Like there seemed to be some writing in it, because like there is an advancing plot, but the writing like and stuff you experience very obscure, and then you get the really weird ending, which weird, and then like the only ending that you got that had like a lot of writing and stuff to it was the second ending after you get the journal.
Yeah.
And that kind of brought a lot of explanation to like, what the hell am I doing this first part of the game?
Yeah.
That was interesting though. I mean, at first I almost didn't start the second walk. It was like, oh, okay, game's over. You know, and then it's like, and then I saw something like somewhere it said, oh, yeah, and then it really gets interesting when you go on the second year walk. And I'm like, what? So, yeah, and then that's true. I mean, it's like, and at first the way it presents to you, it's like, oh, cool. The developer put, you know, his little blog about how he researched the game and stuff like that. It's then it starts getting a little more in depth and involved. And I'm like, whoa, where are we going here?
Yeah.
So I actually, kind of like almost enjoyed the second half almost as much as the first half, you know, reading all the journal entries and his research. And I'm wondering, like, okay, now then you start thinking, all right, are they screwing with me again? Or is this just fiction, fan fiction, or did this really happen? You know?
Yeah. For those listening, like you could go on a kind of like play the game again, almost like second year walk of sorts. And there's a journal in when you're playing the game the first time that you cannot open. It asks for a password and a username, but you don't have it. You don't find it anywhere in the game until you go in the second year walk, and then it's hidden in the map as you scroll over it. And so once you enter that in, it gives you notes into someone researching year walks in Sweden, and just coming into all, you know, all of a sudden these sheep start appearing to them and this crazy stuff starts happening and you end up using the shapes for a puzzle in the game to get to kind of a second ending of sorts.
Yeah, and the credits on the first one.
Oh, that's right.
Where to find the basically the login.
Yes.
It tells you at the end.
Yes, I completely forgot about that because I saw it in a walkthrough before I got to the credits. So yeah, thank you. Is there anything else that you guys want to talk about your walk? Is there anything else you want to bring up before we go into final thoughts and scoring for your walk?
I think it would have been hard to convey the paranoia as well in a movie that you feel in the second, like when you're going through the journal.
That's true.
Because you're watching his brain unravel in first person versus in a movie. I think it would be a lot.
Yeah.
It would be a lot more cliche, I feel like, just a lot of, like, scribbling in journals and not bathing.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, red string on the wall versus in the journal, it felt more real, almost, because you had the established, like, normal narrative.
Yeah, and then they had, like, the staged, like, you know, I guess, photographs in there as well.
Yeah.
In the journal.
Exactly. And they actually made one of those little boxes, which is cool. I don't think it actually opens, but it's a neat thing.
Yeah.
But I think if you had tried to do this game in its entirety as a film, it would come across like if you had ever seen the movie The Brothers Grimm.
Yes. Yes.
I think it would come across like that, honestly.
Yeah.
It was really bad. If you haven't seen it.
Yeah, it is.
Is that the one with Heath Ledger?
Yes. Indeed it was.
Yeah.
Where they are like...
That's basically the best part of it. The only part you have to know.
Yeah, it's Heath Ledger in it, guys.
And Matt Damon. Anyway, I think the way that this game presents itself, like, at the start, you're like, okay, this is just kind of like a little bit of a creepy puzzle game. And then you're like, no, it's actually... trying to say something about destiny and not very hopeful stuff about destiny, right, but still like that destiny is a thing and that it doesn't matter what you do, basically that the universe will out. And I don't think you could do that well, especially with the time jump
in
the film.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. It's a good point. Anyone else? All right. Well, let's get to giving our final thoughts and scoring of your walk before we jump into Beginner's Guide. Starting with you, Franco.
Overall, interesting little game. Grew on me. I have to admit, it started slow, but it grew on me. And it actually, as I think Madeline had said, it got more interesting for me once you got the first playthrough done and you start the second one and it's like, oh, okay, this is really kind of interesting now. Mm-hmm. And so at least up to my enjoyment of it. So I'll give it a 7.5.
Okay. All right. And Madeline?
I'm going to give this game an 8. I really liked the art style. I liked most of the puzzles. I thought that bringing the journal in, for a second playthrough was interesting. I haven't really seen that.
Yeah.
I don't think I've really seen something like that done. Mm-hmm. At least nothing that comes to mind immediately.
Yeah.
I'm sure it has been. And it was a great length for a puzzle game. I don't want to play a puzzle game that takes me 5 hours to solve.
Mm-hmm.
If I can sit down and be done in 2 hours, That's a happy medium for me. So
yeah, Kevin.
I'm gonna give the game a 6. I really enjoyed the story of the second half once you got the journal. Mm-hmm. But the year walk, I would use. I liked the art style, but that wasn't really enough to save it. And the like sound based puzzle kind of just it audio stuff. It kind of hurt my ears.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it and like some of the stuff creeped me out, but that was part of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris, did you?
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the game to an extent. Mm-hmm. it reminded me a lot of the Cube Escape games.
Mm.
That are kind of they're kind of similar in nature, where it's they have a very like I guess macabre would be a fitting. Yeah. They kind of have like similar tones to that, mm-hmm. and like yeah, so it felt kind of similar to that series of games. I didn't find the puzzles too infuriating. You know, I kind of the sound one I was having issues with, so I started taking notes as to which one I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, like, you know, writing everything down, I had a fairly easy time of figuring things out.
Mm-hmm.
Just I think the for me the more frustrating thing was finding the baby spirits and then having to click and hold on them while you're navigating.
That was annoying.
The other thing too is like I kind of happened upon them at random points. I don't know if there was a specific thing in the game that told you like where to look. I didn't really necessarily read any of the encyclopedia stuff just because I kind of wanted to get through the game rather than learn mm-hmm. the lore and everything, mm-hmm. which, you know, it just wasn't for me. So that's why I didn't really pay too much attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, I was going to say something, but completely forgot. yeah, so it's like the baby one was really the only really infuriating one that mm-hmm. I had. Everything else was pretty easy to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a small game. I do agree it probably would be better just to be played on mobile, mm-hmm. just for the length of time that the actual gameplay you have in there.
Mm-hmm.
But then also on the other hand, too, is like there's a lot of things that you have to note down. So like that also plays against being it on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I mean, I was fine with it. I enjoyed it. The puzzles, again, like they weren't infuriating to me. I found them moderately easy to get through. But yeah, overall, I'd go to 7.5.
Okay. I'm glad you guys really liked the game, or at least enjoyed it. I had trouble. I'm sorry. I had issues. I don't know. I think it was just not my kind of puzzle solving. Like that kind of bothered me, which is points I've already said in this chat. The artwork was nice. I think there were parts in the music that I really enjoyed too, like just in the sound effects and things. And the subject matter, like I liked it being based on the myths and the lore of that area. And I thought that was really interesting. And I enjoyed the second half. That was my favorite part, was mm-hmm. that second walk and the journal and, you know, and that whole like weird ending that came after that. And that was worth, you know, that was better than the first half to me by yards. So I think I'm going to give it a 5.5. All right. So I will put those into a scorecard along with the other one. Well, I mean, I'll put Beginner's Guide and Year Walk separate, but we'll get into our discussion of Year Walk. I mean, not the Year Walk, the Beginner's Guide, guys. Year Walk all over again. This is your second year walk. So the Beginner's Guide, which was released in 2015 by Davey, I think it's pronounced Reden, everything by,
yes.
Under Everything Unlimited. Everything Limited. Unlimited Limited. So a little synopsis. The Beginner's Guide is a narrative video game from Davey, the creator of the Stanley Parable. It lasts about an hour and a half and has no traditional mechanics, no goals or objectives. Instead, it tells the story of a person struggling to deal with something they do not understand, which is very accurate. So starting off small, what were some of your favorite? So the game is – that didn't really give a synopsis of the game. The game is about – I mean, it's basically Davey taking you through his friend Coda's games that he created as Davey knew him and became friends with him. So Coda created these little games that were just little blips, you know, that he didn't release. He didn't show to anyone. He didn't release to the public. He just showed to certain people, which eventually that included Davey. And so Davey's taking us through some of these little games, which some of them are really quick, a little bit, you know, some of them are a little bit longer, but none of them are really that long. And that's the whole of the game. And Davey's giving this running commentary as he's going through this stuff to, or as he's going through these games on his relationship with Coda and some of the kind of behind the scenes of the makings of these little things and stuff. So anyways, so you go through these little games, these rooms, and which did any of you have any favorites? Any favorite of Coda's games that you liked the most? Or any least favorites?
I liked the housekeeping one because that was like the most interactive of the games that there were.
Yeah.
So I liked... Steph is laughing because I told her in my questions that that was my least favorite of all of the levels, because in every other one you can do, like, you can do whatever you want, and like, and Davey is your narrator and will sometimes like comment on what you're doing.
Yeah.
But you can do whatever you want. And in the housekeeping one, the other person there is constantly telling you what to do, and like nothing else happens. You can't do anything else until you do what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And it drove me absolutely up the wall. Also, I hate chores. That probably has something to do with it. But I hated it. It was not restful. That was not a nice place to hang out, like Davey thought.
It's really interesting because like I'm thinking about it now, and it's funny because like I told Mal, I was like, yeah, I felt really relaxing, like I found it really restful, but then now I'm starting to wonder, like, did I find it restful, or was I finding it restful because Davey was telling me I was finding it restful? Like, because Davey was like, this is my favorite, it's very relaxing, like Coda was in a really good place in his life when he made this and he was smiling all the time. And I don't know. I really don't know if I actually found it relaxing or if it was because Davey was telling me all these good things about the room and about Coda while he was making it. Kevin, you're going to say something?
I liked the notes level where all the things are connected to the internet, where you're quote unquote connected to the internet.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, and I did bother to go and open, get the dev console open and fly around the level. No, the other notes do not do anything that you can't get to. They're just there for aesthetics.
Okay.
Figured.
Kevin's breaking the game. Yeah, I did. I loved that one as well. I found that I read all of them just because I found it really interesting, the different things that for those listening, this little game, like it started out with you know, this game is connected to the internet. And that users could leave notes, like all, like you could discover these little like thought bubbles as you're walking through this area, through this game. And each one had like a little saying, and it was, you know, supposedly the game made you believe when you first started it that those were left by users because the game was online. And Davey's like, well, of course this wasn't online. These were all done by Coda. Mm-hmm. And some of them are very revealing, I mean, kind of. I mean, you think they're revealing because they're personal kind. You know, they're just like, I feel so alone. And some of them are like your typical like comments on something that people leave, like on YouTube videos, like notice me or like read this, you know, like
door that doesn't open. You had one job.
Yes. Yes. I love that one. I love that one. Anyone else have any favorite rooms?
My favorite was, it's just a blank platform and there's like two or three big, like bulky building shapes on it. And there's the stairs that you're supposed to go up. And like about three quarters of the way up the stairs, it slows you way down.
Yes.
But if you go to the corner of the platform behind that building, Davey's like, you know, I know it's tempting, but there's nothing over here. And will you walk to that corner? You can hear like echoes like far away of like a hooker like catcalling you like, hey, sugar, what you doing? You know you want to have a good time? Like, yes. And I was like, that's so perfect because that's exactly what like space that's clearly not meant.
Yeah.
Like in a good game level design, you can tell like this is the place I'm supposed to go because there's light. There's like an obvious path.
Yeah.
There's not barricades or cliffs or things trying to shoot me.
Yeah.
And then there's all those other things that you want to try and explore and find out some more stuff about. And you were like, well, I just want to kind of see how far I can get. Like, what are the limitations here? Mm-hmm. What is my legal, you know, my leeway? And that's exactly what, like, that's exactly the sentiment, I guess, of a hooker cat calling you on a corner, in the corner of an empty, like an empty platform. In a game,
trying to do that. Yeah, that's
what you can. What you can hear of.
That was fantastic.
Yeah,
And then when you actually do get in the room, where it has like all of the ideas for all different types of games, and a lot of them aren't actually like full game concepts. They're just like a bunch of like random ideas. Like, for myself as a fiction creator, I have a space like that. It's not in a game, but like I have a jar full of like little strips of paper that I write ideas down on.
For sure. And so
it was fantastic to get a peek into somebody else's space like that.
Well, a space that no one was supposed to, I mean, technically in the game that Coda created, you weren't supposed to get up there, but Davey allowed you to get up
just
there.
For him.
Yeah, just for him. Well,
you can actually get up there by walking.
Well, no, I mean.
But then the door doesn't open.
Yeah, yeah. No, the game, like, no, you're not supposed to.
Well, no, but I think he did say that it's supposed to be that you once you get to a crawling pace, the door opens, and then it's just
I know, but you can't get up to it. Davey lets you into the room. Davey allows it to where you can get up there.
Well, you just walk faster if you hit enter.
He says in the narration that players were not supposed to see that room.
Yeah.
Whoever played the game. Oh, it was only for Coda. I said like I liked the housekeeping one because it felt safe, probably safe and comfortable to me. But then again, I'm questioning if that's me or if it's because Davey was telling me that. So without going too much into the ending, into the reveal, did that change your favorite room? Did that change a certain like rooms that you or the small games that you liked, did it change how much you liked them? Considering that Davey possibly might have, I mean, because he kind of says that he made the games a little bit more playable, and so who's to say that the games that we're seeing, if that's even what Coda was wanting, you know, that if it was even all Coda, if Davey didn't add things to make it more quote unquote playable.
I thought it was dumb how he made you skip the, or not made you, allowed you to, if you wanted, skip the maze in the whisper level right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Cause like when you zoom way out at the end of that level, it's not that hard of a maze.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Did you try walking back to the beginning of the maze?
No.
If you do, he tells you, or you could actually go and do the maze.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I also liked the stage that you had to go and talk to the person sitting on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, now you have to go and lean against this wall. So you're going to lean against the wall. And then it's like, you have to go and talk to the bench. And most of the things you say, it's like, no, you're getting it all wrong. Like, you're not saying, like, you're not being cool enough. Which I think is just like any person that struggles with like
social anxiety.
Yeah, social anxiety, like that goes through your, like, that's exactly what goes through your head all the time. And so I thought that was really well done.
Well, you also were being very forward.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But the options were limited. But then sometimes if having social anxiety, you kind of struggle with that kind of like almost being too forward and not really, and being too cool and being like, you know.
Yeah. And I thought it was like a networking space anyway. And so depending on the social space, you're kind of expected to be more forward, or it's more acceptable for people to be a little bit more forward about what they're expecting out of the interaction, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, as you're going through the game, Davey starts to kind of guide your thinking into how Coda's games that he's showing you are becoming darker, are becoming more kind of like showing Coda's isolation, his own personal isolation. Did you find yourself empathizing with Davey as he's telling you this, like empathizing with him and kind of agreeing with him and being like, oh yeah, I can totally see that?
Kind of. You know, with myself and seeing, you know, a friend kind of going through some really tough, you know, mental health issues, it was kind of like, you know, that I was kind of there and, you know, experiencing the same thoughts and everything that Davey was having. It was just a very relatable part as you progress further in the game for me itself. You know, I was expecting too, as you were getting further and further along, that you were going to eventually reach like a suicide note or something at that point, which didn't really happen. And I don't want to get too far into it, but there was one thing that really kind of caught me. It was when you're in the kind of like the final level of the tower. And you get to the top, and Coda is apparently writing these messages to Davey. And one of them was just, it's just such like an innocuous sentence and something that just so could be so easily overlooked. And it was Coda had wrote, "Why do you keep putting lampposts in my game?"
Yes.
And it was like, at that point, it was almost like, all right, is this really Coda? Or is this Davey with some, you know, multiple personality type
talking of to himself?
Yeah. And it's like, is this really someone else? Or is this Davey like having this alternate, like alter ego? And he's like created this person, and this person has been creating these kind of semi depressing loner games.
That's so, my opinion on the game.
Yeah,
to a degree. Because I mean, it doesn't say if it's fiction or nonfiction. I remember when the game came out, one critic reminded people that they could probably beat the game in under 2 hours and return it.
Yes, I saw that. I saw an article referencing the article today.
Cheeseness wrote that in his article. Or his write-ups, he mentioned that article. But the game is fiction.
It's not confirmed. It's still not confirmed.
Yeah.
Even today, he's purposefully silent on it. You know, he doesn't want anybody to know.
The creator has said in some sources that, yes, it's a real person, but then also in his blogs, he talked about how it was referencing things that he went through post Stanley Parable release.
Yeah.
And so the response that it got.
The other thing,
I think it's a little bit of both.
The other thing, too, with the reviewer that said you can beat it and return it within 2 hours, basically it went kind of further in saying how the reviewer said that because as he was playing the game, it was basically, you know, felt like Davey and stole these games, and Coda explicitly didn't want anyone else to see this stuff.
Right. And so if it's true, if it's a work of nonfiction, then that's theft. And if you want to return the game, then it's not theft anymore because you didn't, you know, he didn't make any money off of it.
Yeah.
Sure. But a net result of that is people buying the game, playing it and returning it and being complicit in the theft because they're still participating as a user.
Yeah. Right.
So it's not don't buy this game. It's return it.
Right.
Which is really crappy.
Mm-hmm. It's totally a double-sided coin because then you're left as the viewer with if you actually view it as nonfiction, you're not really left with an option because either you keep it and you've given money to somebody that you personally think stole the content, or you return it and now you're the theft for having played the game and seeing the things that you weren't supposed to see. So it's an interesting, like, super introspective game.
Mm-hmm.
But my personal opinions at the end of it was that it was him having the creative problem of, in one hand, as a creative, as somebody who has to make a game, especially a game like Stanley Parable, that's so I don't know. It's odd.
Out there.
Yeah.
And so you have to make a game like that, then you have to have the face, you know, in public. And when you go to these shows, like if you go to PAX or whatever, you have to put on a certain face for people, like a lot of people. And if you don't have the face, people are going to be like, well, I don't want to play a sad game from a sad person.
Yeah.
And so it did feel kind of like I made all these games, and just having played Stanley Parable, it seems like a logical, it seems like the games that Coda had put up would be logical
responses,
precursors, like before that, you know, they actually feel like practice levels for what became Stanley Parable.
Yeah.
Because there's these, you're slowing down, you're unable to move. Well, Stanley Parable has tons of those things where you go to the top of the steps and then you jump down and it's like, why are you trying to kill me? You know? Yeah. And like this kind of, So I totally felt like that was, they were the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he's fighting with the person on the outside he's having to be versus on the inside where he really probably wanted to make a game that just spoke to certain people.
The one thing that I found interesting and that was noted in articles, and I can kind of see from playing it and stuff, is that Cheesness noted, and then it was Robert Yang.
His friend is near him.
Who wrote an article and also did playtesting for it. Noted like the levels in the game seem too well made, kind of be made by a novice game designer.
I mean, and even I think, at least for me, like there were several things, since we're talking, like there were several things that, I mean, I got what we're talking about from the game, but also I think if you look at it from a story perspective, the in-game story perspective of of Davey realizing towards, you know, because as you're going through the game for this, you know, as you get towards the end, Davey starts talking about how Coda stopped making games, or like he mentions it several times while you're going through these games. But towards the end of the beginner's guide, he talks about, you know, the last game that he made, which is the tower. And, you know, he takes you through it. And then towards the end, you start, you know, he shows you notes that Coda left in the game for Davey, pretty much placing Coda not making games anymore on Davey's shoulders. And just because, you know, because Davey was showing the games to like people that he knew, he was taking a private thing and making it not private, which was changing the kind of creative that Coda wanted to be. And I think that, if, you know, yes, I think that it was probably, I don't think that it was like a completely truthful game. I think it was probably, you know, a lot of introspective on Davey's part after the Stanley Parable. But also if you look at it from an in-story perspective of just like, it was an interesting look at how, you know, and you start kind of questioning like, okay, was Davey like a friend or was he like a fan of Coda's, you know, of like, you know, he had saw his work somehow. And just like, because he talked about it first, he was really outgoing when he was talking to Coda. Like he was very, like he overdid it because, you know, he was excited to see his stuff. And so you kind of see, oh, well, I'm trying to put into words what I'm trying to say, kind of how fans of certain things of developers or of studios will, one, try to find meaning in games that might not have meaning, because that's what Davey was doing with Coda's games. He was trying to find, you know, he was saying, oh, well, this is an introspective into Coda's downfall, like, you know, his mental unstableness. You know, look, he's making prisons because, you know, and I just find this really sad. But then towards the end, he's like, well, maybe he just liked making prisons. Like, maybe he just liked doing a game with a prison in it. You know, it doesn't have to have that second meaning or third meaning or fourth meaning. But also, it also is an interesting example of how fans, want them, because like towards the end, Davey starts saying things like, you know, when he's kind of talking to Coda as he's narrating, you know, and Davey starts to kind of unravel towards the end of the game in his narration, you know, he starts being, you know, like, just create something, Coda, like just create something, you know, just to give my life meaning, just to make it worthwhile. And I think, you know, in some cases, you can see fans doing that with creatives, is that they find their own self-worth in the creative's work. And like fans getting upset at a sequel to a game franchise that, you know, that they love and being like, well, this isn't it. This isn't the sequel that we deserve. It's like, yeah, but that's what the company made. That's what that creative person made. So there's several, like, to me, like, I just got hit with several things, like, as I got to the end of this game, like, with the whole, like, inner thing with, you know, with your creative side, which I really, you know, I really got a lot from that as far as, like, being a creative myself. Like, wow, there was a lot to glean from this game.
Yeah, I got closer to Steph's impression that that there is no one interpretation for art, which is kind of how I've felt for a long time, that art is a conversation. And so the artist will say something and then the audience will experience whatever the artist has produced and have a response to that. And it is the place that the art happens is in the interaction of that. It is never only what the artist has created or what the audience perceives, but it is both and neither of those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's what I got from this game. Mm-hmm. Also, that it isn't like, obviously, like Neil Gaiman says, George R. R. Martin is not your bitch. He doesn't have to do whatever mm-hmm. you want because yeah. you enjoy his work. But at the same time, you can appreciate and really love what a person does and think that you have it all figured out, but need to understand that this is a thing that multiple truths exist for.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also covers really well of how Davy was approaching, if you're looking at, you know, any kind of basis, you know, for, you know, realistic basis for Davy and Coda as friends, that Davy was approaching the friendship as like, or approaching his friendship with Coda or whatever it was, as he was wanting to fix Coda. Like, yeah. maybe if I show his games to people and they say that they're good, you know, that they like them, that will, and I let him know that will fix it, or that will fix him, that will fix Coda. And at the same time, Davy admitted later, like, you know, he got personal satisfaction from people saying, oh yeah, I like these games, even though he didn't create them. He was just showing them.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Madeline.
The second video that I posted in our Discord channel for this, mm-hmm. the dude talks about that as a critic, because that's what he does. Obviously, he makes mm-hmm. videos about games. And he said that he felt like that was really like hitting super, like exactly at critics, basically saying mm-hmm. that like you get your livelihood on the backs of someone else. Yeah. And you think you have it all figured out, which is not true for every critic, but that's often the way, and I'm speaking as a critic myself, that's often the way we present ourselves.
Yeah.
That like, this is the interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how art works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the lines, because like as you're kind of going through, you're starting to kind of realize that Davy is more of the one who might have some issues rather than Coda.
Yeah.
And then Coda putting in the, like, all the stuff in the final level. But one of the lines that really hit me was, the fact that you think I'm frustrated or broken says more about you than mm-hmm. about me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oof.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that... I'm sorry, Kevin, did I interrupt you?
It's just like one of those things where you're kind of...
Hit you.
Yeah, where you're, you kind of end up realizing that you're seeing somebody else's quote unquote problems.
Mm-hmm.
As something that's affecting them when it's you just actually seeing yourself.
Yeah, it can happen. Yeah. There were several things in this game that were revealed or spoken or written that just kind of made me think about things. And even the whole thing with Davy and how he, and just that reveal and just like things, his revealing of just like how he would talk, you know, like how he was treating Coda. That it wasn't necessarily helpful, even though he was trying to be helpful. And to some people, and as I said, like, I went through the entire game being like, oh yeah, like, I can see, like, I went through the entire game being like, oh yeah, I can see the dissent in these games. Like, yeah, you're really, yeah, yeah, you're helping your friend, go for it. Yeah, yeah, you're doing the good thing. You're doing the right thing. And then getting hit with that at the end of like, oh, that wasn't, that possibly wasn't the right way to go about, quote unquote, being, or, you know, being Coda's friend, or, you know, quote unquote, helping him if he did need help. Mm-hmm. It really made me think about things on that level of just how I communicate with people and how I deal with them and how I possibly people I see with, oh, they have these problems and they need help. You know, maybe some things, some ways that I think are okay with going about helping them might not be the correct ways to go about helping them, or in communicating with them. Anyone else get anything out of the different layers, meanings in the game?
Yeah. I mean, as a creative, I definitely felt, I felt like both people a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I've created lots of things that no one's ever seen. I mean, just me. I've created lots of things that people have seen, and, I've created things that lots of people have seen with one thing in it that only I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as I'm creating something that I know lots of people will see, I hide something small in there that it's like, no one but me will ever know that's there.
Mm-hmm.
But I secretly hope somebody finds it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like two different parts of the same. Cause like if Coda really didn't want anyone to ever see it, he never would have shared it. Again, we're under the premise that it was, if it is nonfiction, on the premise that it is fiction, I mean, the truth that he does show it now even, would still show that he wants people to kind of experience this. So I totally feel that, where it's this back and forth where if I make something for other people, I have to make it at the level that other people can experience it and enjoy it. And if that's true, am I cheapening my art by making something that's easily accessible? And if so, then am I, it's like, can I enjoy, I get two different enjoys where, like, if I create something that's entirely hidden and only for me, then I get great joy out of that. But if I make something that everybody can enjoy, maybe I don't really enjoy that, because I had to kind of not dumb it down, but you do have to somewhat dumb something down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like, I guess that's why I feel like this is a premise to Stanley Parable so much, because that's such a great example of a game that is easily accessible. It's not difficult. The controls are completely simple. You can play through that game one time without trying. I mean, you just do anything and you've completed the first game.
Yeah.
But there's so many hidden things in that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, to the point of you have to edit code to get to some of the endings. You have to, there's lots of like hidden stuff in that game. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like a balance of the two of those things, where you have things that he wants everybody to experience, but it's also kind of like hidden some things in there that he doesn't really want everybody to experience, but he's hoping people will find them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like hidden achievements that took weeks to months for people to anyone to ever get, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Or years.
Right.
Stand in someone for years. Yeah, no, for sure. Does anyone else have anything that we didn't cover that they want to cover with the game?
Yeah, I just wanted to briefly talk about this too. So, like, as I'm playing the game as well, you know, I'm also thinking that this is kind of like a great representation of someone who is an introvert. And then you have a very extroverted person befriending or trying to befriend the introvert and using their extrovert ways of trying to interact with you, whereas the introvert just is basically like, I am completely happy and satisfied with this small little box I've built for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need your help. There is nothing wrong with me. It's just I enjoy this, but you want to try and fix something that is just not broken.
Yeah.
And not quite understanding that I am perfectly content with like who I am and where I am. And then also with them going so far as making it like their life's mission of taking you out of your box that you don't need to be removed from.
Yeah.
So, and it's just like, there are just so many layers of this game, and it's just, it's just crazy how simple yet how completely, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like so completely nuanced and like just tiny little things that you can pull out of anything that it's just like, it's just crazy that, you know, what was this like an hour and a half or something or 2 hour game?
Yeah.
That there's just so many deeper meanings within that short period of time. That it's just, it's really, it's interesting that, that, you know, something like this can make you think and reflect on all the different little things that are hidden throughout and also stuff that's just thrown in your face. Like, you know, with one of the pictures that was posted, and it says, like, when I'm around you, I feel physically ill.
Yes.
Which is just like, you know, for an introvert that's dealing with an extrovert, that that's such like a succinct sentence to put to someone who is just like constantly in your face. And it's like, dude, calm down. you know? Yeah. So, but
That's a good point.
You know, also the whole, you know, kind of like there's also the whole depression thing too, and you know, hints of potential mental illness, and it's just, I don't know. Davey just is. I think he hit the nail on the head on a lot of things with just like not game wise, but just human interaction.
Really. Yeah.
The one part that was. That really stuck with me was when in the level with all the notes where he said, you can, like, wouldn't it be awesome if you could just, like, read all about a person or, like, look at all their work and then get to know them that way versus actually having to interact with them. And, like, that part made me almost physically ill. Because that's such a reductive shorthand for both an artist and for a person to assume that you could know a person through their work completely and not have to actually like do the work of talking to them and being their friend. And that at the same time that anybody's work is 100% their person as well. Like Chuck Palahniuk gets asked at every single public outing he goes to about how he could be so honest and talk about all these awful things he's done in his books. And he's like, none of those are me. You understand this, right? None of those are. So that's another thing I think that for me points to this not being a true story.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Because like if he was an extrovert, that would not like if Davey, our narrator, was an extrovert, that would not be the solution, I don't think. For him to say, I want to get to know Coda through all of his work. That to me that's distant.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're running a little over, so we'll go ahead and give our final thoughts and score for the beginner's guide. Starting up at the top. Oh, I think Frank might have went radio silent. I wonder if he knows he's muted. Frank?
Yes. I'm not going to score because I couldn't Good blight finish it, so I'm not gonna.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I forgot about that. Okay. Cool. I'm not sure. Jate, do you want to give a score?
Yeah, I'll skew the numbers.
1 to 10.
Yeah, I'd give it a 9.4.
9.4. Great. Yep. So precise. Okay. All right. All right. Madeline?
I would give this game... I'm going to have to give this game a 10 because everything that I'm upset with it about is stuff that I think I'm supposed to be upset with it about. Yeah. So then I can't actually be upset with it. So 10.
Chris?
Yeah. So I think I've said what I wanted to say throughout this part of the chat. Mm-hmm. So I won't go too much longer, but I'd give it a 9 out of 10. I just kind of wish that there was like, there needs to be like some sort of like an emotional support dog at the end of this game.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, as you're floating up, like a corgi or something floats down into your arms, you know,
so. Have the maze be the shape of a dog's face or something.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Perfect. We have Kevin had to deck out for his weekly D&D, but his final thoughts were, as a person with depression, this gym really hit me and I enjoyed it as an artist and an aspiring game designer, and he gave it a 9 out of 10. I got so much from this game today. Like, I played it today. Oh my gosh. Like, I really have nothing bad to say about it. Again, nothing that's hasn't already been said. It hit me in so many levels, both personally, emotionally, as an artist, as a communicator, as anything. I just think it was just so well done. And I just think it was just expertly done. And just in the delivery of it and just that kind of that build up from the beginning to the end and that whole twist that made me like be with the narrator. And then towards the end, you're just kind of like, oh my God, we had it all wrong. This is really good. I think looking at it on a perspective of even, you know, if the story was true, which I agree with Madeline, I don't think it's completely true. But, you know, the story in the game of Davey and Coda's relationship, as falsified as it is or non-falsified, hits on so many levels. And then also looking at it from a creator's perspective of if this was things that Davey himself dealt with, that in itself hits on completely different levels. I'm going to give it a 10. My second 10 of the year. Wow. It's on a roll.
First week of February.
What a year. What a year, guys.
This is a good week. This is a good year for Game Chat.
Thank you guys for chatting about these games. They were both very interesting experiences. They were both very different, which I think is cool. And so next week we are talking about Speed Dating for Ghosts by developer Copy Chaser Games. That's the only one that we're talking about next week, so it's about two and a half hours. But a nice little synopsis of it is, a branching dialogue, hard choices, a cemetery's worth of phantoms, wraiths, and poltergeists looking for love in all the blight places. Speed Dating for Ghosts is a weird dating sim made by a former BioWare dev and his indie rapper friend. As a lonely specter looking for love in the afterlife, you attend a speed dating event and chat up a cemetery's worth of phantoms, race, and poltergeists. At the end of the spooky mixer, choose your favorite. They'll take you to all the best haunts, old folks' homes, creepy houses with new owners. Maybe solving a murder is your idea of a good time. Or robbing a bank. Ghosts are into all sorts of things. Yeah, I'm excited to chat about you guys. I played this game and I enjoyed it as well. But also we have our month chat, February the 26th, is Detroit Become Human. So be sure to be playing that throughout the month if you plan to attend. It is just on PS4, so if you don't have PS4, watch a playthrough if you want to. And we still have our, like, I think it's like March the 14th Dragon Age Origins chat. So if you're going to be attending that, play that through. For those of you listening, you can catch us at thegamechat.net is our landing ground. The podcasts are available on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Twitter at the_game_chat. But yeah, thanks for chatting with us, guys. So until next week, bye.
Bye.
Bye.